Hello
Hello
there.
there. Welcome back to another episode of Star Wars in the Galaxy, watching all the Star Wars we can get our hands on. I'm Eli.
I'm Jacob.
And this is episode 119 of Star Wars in the Galaxy, and we did it. We made it through Solo, a Star Wars story.
It flew by so
It
fast.
flew by. This is only episode 4 of season 15, which, again, the movies are getting shorter seasons, but because of the sheer length of television shows, like The Bad Batch and The Clone Wars, and later on, this will obviously happen with Star Wars Rebels as well. But I'm just excited to have gotten through this breezy, nice, fun season. Solo is just a nice, fun movie. Star Wars doesn't have to always be this deep. Not, and again, not saying that Solo isn't deep, because it is, but it doesn't have to be this dark and gritty and dramatic story like stuff we see in Revenge of the Sith, or The Last Jedi, or The Bad Batch, or later seasons of The Clone Wars. It can be the light and fun, yet still holding a lot of meaning that we see in Solo and The Phantom Menace and The Book of Boba Fett and other stuff like that.
Yeah, there's more than one way to tell a good to tell a good, impactful, well-done Star Wars story, as I think Solo often shows. Where do you
Yeah,
start with
so
this? Do you
this
want to
is
give
our
your overall thoughts, or
this is the
yeah,
retrospective
there's our
episode.
retrospective.
Jacob, why don't you start off by giving us your overall thoughts of Solo, a Star
Okay.
Wars story?
Solo. Going into this, I hadn't seen Solo in a few years, so I had a relatively clean slate. And I went into this not expecting much from this movie because I really didn't enjoy it when I first saw it in the theaters when it came out, when I rewatched it around 2019, I think. I actually haven't seen it since then. But overall, I liked it a lot more this time than any time I had previously seen it. I think it grew a lot on me. I think I felt like I recognized and appreciated a lot of the things that it did right. I think it's a very imperfect movie. I think it has plenty of flaws. It's a bit bloated. I'm not always sure about the pacing or maybe why parts of the story are in there at all or are the way they are. However, I really enjoyed it for what it was, which I think is more of a fun, campy, little bit pulpy adventure movie. And I think that this is a movie, it's at its best. Solo is at its best when it embraces that. And I think when it tries to take on, and I'm not saying it has to, I'm not saying that it should only be that, because I think that there are a lot of moments in this movie that have some weight, that are well done. Some of the moments with the Cloud Riders, a little bit of what we see with L3, but there are also moments that I think there are moments when this movie tries to take on too much, in a sense, or gets a little bit lost and struggles to find its identity, especially earlier on in the movie. I think a little bit with the death of Val, is that her name?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that to me didn't feel very necessary or well executed. And it didn't particularly reverberate further into the story in an effective way. But that being said, overall, I think I enjoyed it. I think overall, this is a movie with, if nothing else, it felt like it had a lot of heart. It felt like they were really onto something with this movie. And I appreciated more this time what it had brought to the table as a story.
Yeah, I have, I think, a largely similar review to Jacob. If you want my full review, I'm making this a better practice of myself. I'm trying to update this stuff as I watch stuff or rewatch stuff more. Check out my Letterboxd. I did a comprehensive full review of Solo. Just as of this recording, I did it yesterday. This is a bit of behind the scenes stuff for this recording, even though it's coming out a week after the last recording is. We're recording this the day after we recorded that last episode. We're still very much like in that mindset of the last 40, at least for me, I feel like I'm in the mindset of the last 45 minutes of the film still, but I'm still trying to consider all, of course, the full picture. of what we got. But no, but yeah, OGFan 327 on Letterboxd everywhere, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I largely agree with
love Letterboxd.
Jacob. Yeah, I largely agree with Jacob. I think I'd seen this film. I watched it for trivia recording purposes, I think a bit more recently than Jacob had. Let's see when I watched it last. It was a while ago. The last time I watched Solo was late 2020. It was like the last few days of 2020 where I watched, when I watched Solo for the last time, like about 3 years ago. So yeah, it's been a while for me too. There are a lot of things I love about this movie. There are a lot of things that I think do work for this movie. I think it captures, like Jacob said, the style of Star Wars, the style of the OT, I think it captures very well. I think the Kazdans write some banger lines and jokes and quips for this film that make it feel so in line with the OT vibe of Star Wars while still offering new things to the picture. While still, this is basically, I feel like, one of the first Star Wars films that you can feel a little bit of the impact of Dave Filoni on. Because Dave, I think George created the Pike Syndicate, but obviously Dave helped develop the Pike Syndicate in the Clone Wars. And that was one of our first animation to live action transitions in Star Wars. We didn't really get any of that with the sequels, as much as I love them. And we had to wait till the live action shows to get that with further stuff. But the Pikes were a thing. Mentions of Maul surviving after, as much as I don't like that move, that was still an acknowledgement of the Clone Wars in a way that none of the saga films had done at that point. I think actually, ironically though, that is one of the ways I think this film falls short a little bit, is when it realizes that we're in a Star Wars movie, is the way I feel like it. And there's like and I think this is in contrast to stuff like The Mandalorian or The Book of Boba Fett, where it realizes that it's in Star Wars and it takes full advantage of the fact that it's in Star Wars. Yeah, let's put Cobb Vanth in here. Let's put Kelleran Beck in this show. Let's go all nuts. But it never treats Cobb Vanth, oh, look, it's that guy. You got to know who that guy is. It's, oh, if you don't, it's this cool cowboy guy. It's Timothy Oliphant in Star Wars. But with Maul at the end, I'm thinking, like, with Maul, hey, it's Darth Maul. Remember this guy? Oh, how did he survive? Oh, yeah, you got to watch a few seasons of television to figure that one out. And I feel like that's the same thing for me with the name giving. Like, the Han Solo thing, I feel like they wanted a cool, flashy origin for that name without... And I don't want to say they didn't think it through, because I think they did. I think they came to a different conclusion than I did about what Han getting his name in that manner meant for the character.
I think that this is an example of, throughout this movie, there's a lot of kind of one-liners, punchlines, these very humorous moments that they're not just slipped in there, but they really are punctuating moments. And the element of camp is a big part of this movie. I think that's just one moment where that style just falls flat on its face. And to me, that's unbearable. But I can see how it should have fit into the larger kind of style of what we saw in Solo.
Well, the action sequences are, like, on the other hand, and I do have an overall positive look on this movie. Don't get me wrong. And I will say this again, like I said, the first episode, the only reason that you might be hearing so much negativity about this film from me is because, specifically for me, we are in an era right now with so much gold. Bad Batch season 2 was fantastic. Like all time Star Wars for me. Jedi Fallen Order is really good, growing on me all the time. Survivor is top-notch Star Wars for me. Obi-Wan Kenobi is top-notch Star Wars for me. And Solo isn't bad. Solo isn't bad, in my opinion. It's just not on the same level for me as stuff like Obi-Wan Kenobi or Jedi Survivor or Bad Batch.
Fair enough.
But Solo, look, Solo gets action sequences. The action sequences feel alive and feel feel tangible in a way that I don't think Star Wars has felt in a long time. And except for the final, like I said in the last episode, that final faux lightsaber duel, as I called it, the train heist on Vandor, and the coaxium heist on Kessel, those all feel alive. They all feel like they have purpose. They all feel like, not just action wise and in film logic wise, but narrative wise, you get to know not only what these fights are about, but what they mean to the characters. I think Solo does something really interesting where it balances a line in Star Wars projects that we're always talking about, which is how much are they about the characters? How much are they about the larger universe? And I think Solo balances on that edge where it's, of course, named after Han, but there's just enough happening in the film that's not related to Han directly that it's also making a statement about the larger galaxy. All the stuff with the Empire and Crimson Dawn is not directly related to Han. That stuff would have been happening, generally speaking, in the same way had Han not been in the narrative, had Han not left Corellia. But because Han is in the narrative, we get a further expose on those elements of the galaxy. But of course, the stuff with the coaxium heist and the intrapersonal relationship between him and Beckett and him and Kira and him and Chewbacca, of course, those need Han in the narrative. And I think it balances that on such a great level that, again, I think the vibe of this film just flows so well that it can make me, that it can, I don't want to say forgive, because there's some things that like I'm, that I want, I don't want to sound flippant and say, oh, this thing can just be forgiven, because it can't, but that it can make some of the criticisms I have with this movie about some of the lore stuff, and of course, specifically this film's treatment of women, which I think is problematic, especially for a film released in 2018.
Yeah, I think that just off the bat, obviously, we have going into this movie, I know a lot of people, we were talking about this, we're very excited about Val, about the possibility of having a Black woman, you know, play a major role in this movie, and then she pretty much just comes and goes, and we don't really get to know her. She doesn't have that much impact, and her main impact is just, oh, like, she dies, and now Beckett's mad at Han, and only for a little bit, and then that doesn't even have consequences later on in the story, I would argue. And I do think that was a huge missed opportunity, not obviously from a point of always wanting to see more diversity on screen, because Star Wars is for everyone, and everyone, people of all identities deserve to have people who look like them, who they can identify with in that way on screen. That's something that we hear a lot of people talking about. We've talked to a lot of people. We hear a lot of people talking about how important that is to them. And also just from a pure story standpoint as well, it feels almost like a detour from the rest of the movie because it doesn't have much importance. And I think there was a missed opportunity there. And then, of course, as we talked about last episode, as M from Sisters with Sabers so eloquently explained for us in her write-up, L337 as well, huge missed opportunity, maybe we could say there. As well, you might argue. What do you think about that?
Yeah, just generally speaking, I agree with you that, yeah, like I said before, that I don't think this film treats its female characters exceptionally well. For some reason, I don't really, like, I think it's because probably she has just a minor enough role in this film not to, like, get into it. The only exception to this rule, I feel like, is Nest, which, thank God, because...
Yeah.
Love that character and love what she does for the narrative of the story. But with everybody else, it's just with all the other female characters, there's always just something that makes that is the Kira pseudo-sexual relationship with Dryden that makes me question a few things. Yeah.
We talked about with Buck, how much of that is like just the filmmakers, and we can question the execution and different aspects of it, but that is, I think, to some extent, the filmmakers, you know, taking on something really real. And whether or not they should have done that, I guess, is something we can argue about. But I think I wouldn't necessarily argue that is poor treatment of Kira's character. I think that's, you know, taking on the idea of men in powerful positions, like we saw what happened, with everything that's been revealed with Me Too. That was really an open secret for so many people about how men in power have abused their positions, sexually speaking. And then, of course, Buck's point about trafficking and whatnot. To me, that's not so much. To me, that doesn't feel like a bad thing to me to include that aspect of it. And I think that definitely
I
adds an
want to
element to
clarify just
Dryden's
because
character.
I don't mean to say that I don't think they should have included it. I just think the way they handled it was a little strange.
I'll give you that. I'll give you that. Yeah, that's fair enough.
Because of the like weird amount that it wasn't like, of course, if it was just in passing, that would be, I think, even worse. But it wasn't quite mentioned enough to be like an actual subplot in the film.
So you think it made her feel a little ornamental, is what I'm hearing you say?
Yeah, I think it was just
That's
like
fair.
some, yeah. I think it was just some, like, I think it was something they put in there just to put in there and not to have it actually, like, if it was actually portraying like a sort of message there, then I might have been more okay about it. That not about the like actual thing that's
I
happening. That's
understand what you
horrific,
mean.
but
Yeah, I
yeah.
understand what you mean.
But yeah, I think we've talked enough about our overall thoughts of this film. But yeah, mostly good with some stuff that I hope will be improved in Star Wars in the future.
Yeah.
Best moment, go ahead.
Best moment? Oof, man. Maybe not one moment, maybe a sequence of moments, if I can do that. I would have to say Han and Lando, or first off, Han and Chewie seeing the Falcon for the first time. Han almost meeting the Falcon. It feels that shot of them, of Han and Chewie under the cockpit, looking up with that familiar lighting. As the music swells and we get that main theme motif, it gave me goosebumps. It's just beautiful. And then Han and Lando in the cockpit of the Falcon talking as Han sees the inside of the Millennium Falcon for the first time. Han talking about, oh, my dad, he assembled these ships but never flew them, and neither did I until now. I think that for me was that was my favorite moment from this movie. That was pretty fun.
Yeah, for me, it's good sequence. I'm going completely the other side of the film. I'm gonna go with the moment from the moment they land on Savarine to the moment that they approach the first light on Savarine. Everything there, the Han and Kira's conversation, you are the good guy, going to, of course, the fantastic sequence, the Savarine standoff, as it's called by John Powell in the score, with that great bluff, and then revealing the truth behind Crimson Dawn. We really suspected Crimson Dawn to be this entire time, and really it's just Nest confirming what we should have already figured out before, which is that this gang of criminals might not be such great people. Excellent, like the acting specifically from Ehrenreich and Clark and Kellyanne is just so great, so much great energy. Like it feels like it's the most polished and most thought out part of that film.
The most personal part, for sure. I think especially with Han and Kira, that's a really important sequence for those characters and for us as the audience connecting with them. So I absolutely agree. That's a great choice. That's a great choice as well.
All right. Worst moment. Let's do this.
Worst moment. Do you want to go first? Because I have
Nah, you
two,
go
and
first.
I know which one you'll do, so I'll cover. My worst moment has to be on Solo, when that
Yeah,
Imperial
I can
officer just
understand
gives
that.
on
I
his
can
name.
understand that.
I don't know. I think it takes away, for all the things this movie does to pay homage to the original trilogy movies and the prequels, but especially the originals and that time period as well. This moment really just feels, it just feels pointless and cringy and just not right for this movie, not right for Han. It takes away just the allegorical charm of his name, just for a cheap joke. So I'm not a fan of this moment. I feels like an easily avoidable, this just one moment. So there's other things I like about this movie, so I don't want to be too much of a downer, but this moment definitely made me pretty unhappy, even rewatching this all these years after it first came out.
You know what, and I might make
what,
sorry, this is going into my worst moment, but I agree about Solo. I think it's one of the worst screenwriting decisions in that film. I just don't like it. Again, no disrespect to people who do. Alden Diaz, good friend of mine, really does like it, and I completely understand his reasoning, but I just don't agree. You know what would be funny is if we had the scene at the end with Kira, and then she sees Maul, and then she's and he's like, meet me on Dathomir, and then we edit so that Han, we reverse the footage so Han walks back in, and then we edit Rice Gum saying irrelevant over it.
That's a deep cut.
I haven't thought about
Rice Gum in a long time.
That is exactly how I feel. That is exactly how I feel about that scene. It's just so irrelevant. Like, it is, like, I literally, in my notes, it just says, it's Maul at the end, enough said. Screw that decision. God, I don't like it. Really? Oh my. Like, is it related to my personal thing about Maul coming back? Absolutely. 100% it is. I just can't get behind it. I just cannot get behind it. Could I have warmed up to it a little bit if we got a more direct follow-up to Solo? Maybe. But as we didn't, at least not yet, that's where I'm headed with this. But you already knew that. Best character. What are you going with?
Yeah, best character. That's hard in this movie. I think I'm going to have to go with Lando because...
That was me too. I went with Lando.
I love Lando. Sorry, Buck, but I thought that Lando was great in this movie.
Yeah,
really,
no, I
really
liked, I agree with you.
I really liked Donald Glover's version of him. I do agree that he was a bit held back by the script, but with that being said, I thought he did a fantastic job. The charisma was on point, everything, the swagger, it was there. It was the Lando that we knew, but at the same time, he made it his own a little bit. Shout out to Alden Ehrenreich as well. Tremendous job as a younger, less jaded Han. I think we got a lot of flack for that. But honestly, what are you expecting? He's not Harrison Ford. He's a different actor. Recasts got to happen. It's impossible to avoid it.
Disney is trying to avoid it right now, but okay.
I'd prefer a recast to the weird Uncanny Valley AI hodgepodge that they're trying to pull with Luke Skywalker. I don't like that at all. I don't agree with it. I don't like it. And I don't accept
it. I think it can be used in some scenarios, but I generally agree with you that
misuse
I would prefer
in this case.
I would prefer recasts over that sort of deep fake technology. Generally speaking. I think the Luke, especially in book, looked fine. I would hope that because the guy they have playing him, Max Lloyd-Jones in, I believe it was Max Lloyd-Jones in Mandalorian, it was somebody else, I forget his name, in Book of Boba Fett. But if you looked at him without the deep fake, he already looked a lot like Luke anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. One more for best character. I'm going to go ahead and say, man, there's a lot, man. Kira, I thought thought Kira was fantastic. I know we haven't talked about her a whole lot, not just what she does for Han's development, but also just in her own right through this movie, seeing her move through her world and cope with the same things that Han is in a different way. That's really fun as well and enjoyable. And also L337, I think that's a kind of character that we really haven't seen in Star Wars very much.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Shout out as well. Shout out to L3, gone too soon. Yeah. R.I.P. to a real one. Who do you got? I want to hear your.
Mine was Lando.
Oh, you said Lando as well.
Yeah, mine was Lando. I completely agree with you. I understand that people say, oh, the script is holding him back and all that kind of stuff. I understand those complaints. But also, this wasn't a movie about Lando.
Yeah.
If only we were getting one of the. Anyway, but I do understand people when they say the script is holding him back, but I do genuinely love what they did with Lando in this movie. I think I think that Donald Glover is a great Lando. I watched, since the episode we recorded with Buck, I watched This Is America again. I still cannot believe that one person is responsible for Lando in this film, and also Troy in Community, and also This Is America. I cannot believe Atlanta. And Atlanta.
Amazing show.
Which I haven't seen, actually.
Watch it if you haven't. You should watch it. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's a hoot. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. But it's just crazy to me that one man can have that much talent.
He gets around.
But yeah, the charisma, the one-liners, like it all does this for me. Worst characters.
I don't really have a worst character, to be honest. I don't really. I guess Dryden Voss, I think, as a villain. Paul Bettany did a great job. He was pretty good, but he wasn't special. He was a kind of villain that we haven't seen too much in Star Wars. That being said, I don't know. I can't really ask for anything more than what we got. But I guess of the main cast, maybe this was the character that impressed me the least. I can't really say Maul for this one just because he was only there for such a short time.
I'm not going to say Maul either because
even though I hated that cameo, I thought it was totally unnecessary.
I said Maul in for the worst moments. Forced myself to pick something else for the worst character.
Okay,
Maul. Don't get me wrong. I don't like Maul as a character, but he's undeniably been involved in some great moments in specifically the Clone Wars. I don't agree with the decision to bring him back, but I can't deny that the Siege of Mandalore is great, and one of the reasons is because of Maul, even if I don't like him coming back.
Maul's incredible in that. Can't argue with that. He's incredible in Siege of Mandalore.
You know what character does not have the Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels, the Siege of Mandalore, and the Phantom Menace to back them up?
Who?
Drod Mundbrin. Fuck that guy.
Okay.
You know who he is, right?
Possibly.
Han Solo.
Oh. We see him for 2 seconds.
So. I know, but
if you want to count that, sure. Yeah.
His parents didn't do him a good duty of naming him right. I don't see what gives him the right to name other people.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Your name is Drod Mundbrin. I don't think that gives you the right to give any name to any person.
Yeah. Fair enough. Hard to argue.
Coolest thing you noticed from the rewatch?
Maybe not one thing, but overall, just all the little ways that this movie kind of pays homage to the original trilogy, the prequels a little bit, just all the stories that kind of came before, that put it down before, that allowed this story to happen. I think, you know, the shot of Han and Chewie, as I said, standing under the Falcon's cockpit with the original theme motif, the use of the asteroid, the asteroid music from Empire Strikes Back as well was perfectly placed. The little Duel of the Fates hits we got with Maul, just Han's little pause and grin when he sits down at the Falcon's controls, the VCX-100 line, because that's the type of ship that the Ghost is. Even the little Teras Kasi nod back to where did Teras Kasi originate? I can't remember where it originated.
Masters of Teras Kasi.
Masters of Teras Kasi. It's an old Legends game. Just overall, I think the attention to detail, the respect and the love that it shows to the other stories, the original trilogy era, it makes me like this movie a lot more, noticing these little things and noticing kind of the attention that it puts in these ways.
Yeah, absolutely. I that's a good point. For me, I've mentioned this in previous episodes. It's just how funny this movie is. I forgot how funny this movie is. It's one of the funniest Star Wars movies. The bluff on Severin, you do your thing. It's not a thermal detonator. You're just making a clicking sound with your mouth. There's some funny shit in this movie.
And they actually land. I think sometimes when Star Wars TV shows, movies try and indulge in this type of humor, I think it has pretty mixed results, but it really works. With one glaring exception here, I feel like it really works in Solo.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Favorite planet?
That's tough. I thought the design of Kessel was really cool. Numidian Prime as well. Seems like a nice place. I like the little setup that Lando had going there, but I'll go with Savarin. I thought
Me
Savarin
too.
was
I
really
went with Savarin
striking.
as
It was a
well.
great backdrop for a lot of the Western style standoff moments we experienced here. So I'll go with that.
We just haven't really seen that many beach planets in canon other than Savarin and Scarif. And so I'm hoping to see more of them. And I think Savarin is a really interesting deserty beach environment. Really interesting stuff. And I love again, the Western atmosphere that scent. That created for the final showdowns between Han and Beckett and Kira and Dryden and all those people. I thought it was done exceptionally well. All right, I think that is going to be it for our retrospective, but of course, we can't end a retrospective episode without talking about what's coming next for next season of Star Wars and Galaxy, season 16 of Star Wars and Galaxy. Jacob and I are very excited to announce. I'm very excited. I don't know how excited Jacob is, but Jacob has been hearing me talk about this season in anticipation for way too long because I am so goddamn excited for it. That's right. Season 16 of Star Wars in a Galaxy, Obi-Wan Kenobi. This is one of the first times in Star Wars in a Galaxy's history where we're going to be doing an episode to an episode thing. We're not going to be doing bunches of episodes. We're not going to be doing chunks. It is going to be a 7-episode season, part one, part two, part three, part four, part five, part six, and then our retrospective. That will be the season. This will happen. This episode is coming out by the time you're listening to this episode. Let's see what day is it's going to be. It's going to be. I'm looking at my calendar. By the time you listen to this episode, it will be December 8th. There will be no. Jacob and I are taking a short break. There will be no In a Galaxy episode on December 15th. We'll be taking a week off and we'll announce that as that goes. There will be no traditional In a Galaxy episode released on the next week on the 22nd, on Friday the 22nd. However, we will be doing something before that. Jacob and I will be going live on the Star Wars in a Galaxy YouTube channel with special guests, Marie Wilson, Jared the Dark Jedi, and Maggie Y. Nerdy, to do our final of this round, culminating bracket stream. And Marie, Maggie, and Jared won our previous bracket streams. So it's going to be the four of them and us talking about what category is it, Jacob?
Blup shittos.
It is our background characters, Flup Shittos. We're instead of people choosing from a list that's already been created, people are choosing their own Glup Shittos. The only rule is they must appear on screen at least once in a Star Wars film, television show, or video game. But other than that, people can go wild with whatever they want to do. We've already gotten some selections. But yeah, follow everybody who's involved on Twitter and Instagram and everywhere. We'll put the links down in the description. But I'm really excited to finish up the bracket stream. And then the next week with the episode releasing, I believe, on the 26th. So right after Christmas. No, the episode re actually, no, the episode releasing on the 29th. So we'll end the year. The final episode of In a Galaxy for the year of 2023 will be part one of Obi-Wan Kenobi, and we'll continue it into early 2024. There's one more announcement that I will make with season 16 of Star Wars and Galaxy, and it's something that Jacob and I have been talking about. Jacob and I have missed having guests regularly on In a Galaxy, even though like we've started up having with Jared and then with Chidi and Alex and then with Buck recently. We are going to have a guest on every single episode, mainline episode of season 16. Parts 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 will all have guests. We've planned some of them. We haven't planned all of them yet, but by the time that we're recording them, we will have them all locked down. So I hope that everybody enjoys 6 guest episodes in a row. It's a crazy new thing we're trying. We'll see how that goes. But Yeah, in the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, everywhere on all social medias, at In a Galaxy Pod. You can listen to us everywhere you listen to podcasts, Star Wars in a Galaxy. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel. Follow me everywhere, linktr.e/_ochifan327. Watch Epic Confrontations. I think by the time this is out, Scotty Holiday versus Jerry, the Canon Junkie, will be out. We hope y'all enjoy that match. And in the meantime, may the Force be with you. Always.